E crita sohridartha. Venesi de hambara varati keshu. Griheshu jayat majarati masu. Napriti yukta yavadaratas chaloke. Those who are interested in reviving Krishna consciousness and increasing their love of Godhead do not like to do anything that is not related to Krishna. They are not interested in mingling with people who are busy maintaining their bodies, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. They are not attached to their homes, although they may be householders. Nor are they attached to wives, children, friends, or wealth. At the same time, they are not indifferent to the execution of their duties. Such people are interested in collecting only enough money to keep the body and soul together. Om Ajnanti Nirandasya Yananjana Chalakaya Chakshuru Militam Jena Tasmai
Shri Guruve Namaha.
Good afternoon from Srimad Bhagavatam, the teachings of Lord Rishabhdev. Lord Rishabhdev appeared in this world by his causeless mercy. He is an avatar of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As we know, Swayambhu Manu had two children, two sons, Priyavrat and Maharaj Uttanapada. Priyavrat, although he was meant to inherit the kingdom, in his association with Sri Narada Muni, became so detached from any material enjoyment, he wanted to exclusively dedicate all of his consciousness to remembering the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He had no inclination to divert that attention to any of the worldly things. So he went to a secluded and holy place, and there he practiced bhakti. So Maharaj Uttanapada became king. His son was Dhruva Maharaj. As time went on, the descendants of Dhruva were no longer present to accept the kingdom, so Maharaj Priyavrat was approached by Lord Brahma, by Swayambhuva Manu, and they explained to him that you are the best fit person in all the world to be king. Therefore, you should take this responsibility. He was not at all inclined. To take kingdom means to be engaged in so much diplomacy, to live in a beautiful palatial home, to marry, take care of wife, children, to have to defend the kingdom from enemies, organize armies, tax the citizens, many, many duties. He had no inclination. But Narada Muni, who was his guru, understood, although he was basically teaching detachment and renunciation, because his guru, Lord Brahma, desired that Priyavrat enter household life and become king, Narada accepted. We find in the Transcendental Society of True Vaishnavas, however great and powerful one may be, one is always submissive to one's guru and to superior Vaishnavas. Although we read about the most amazing pastimes of Narada Muni, he had such disciples as Prahlad, Dhruva, so many, Valmiki, who are Mahabhagavats. Still, even in his position, he was always submissive, always ready to carry out the orders of his guru and the superior Vaishnavas. In the impersonalist line, we follow our superiors in order to become purified from material attachments. And then the idea is we merge into the existence beyond material duality, and in that state we become God, and then there is no individuality, and therefore we have no need to surrender to anything or anyone. We become the very object of surrender. So in this line of thought, the guru, the deity of the temple, they are all just means to achieve an end beyond them. Like a stair, you step on it, it takes you to a higher place, and then you give it up. But according to the principles of Srimad Bhagavatam, this is a very undesirable condition of consciousness, which can never ever lead us to the higher truths. The highest doctrine of Srimad Bhagavatam teaches the Vaishnava line, in which we understand we are eternally servant of the servant of the servant. However great, however exalted, however pure, however we enter into the higher rasas of spiritual life, we always remain subordinate, submissive, and surrendered to our guru, to the higher Vaishnavas, and we always remain the servant of the servant of the deity. The idea that you become God, you become guru, is offensive. We take so much favor. We take so much grace. It is the natural heart of a true devotee that he remains eternally grateful. Even when we go beyond liberation to the spiritual world, our desire is, if that is where Krishna wants us to go, that we still remain surrendered and submissive to the higher Vaishnavas. So Narada Muni accepted Brahma's idea, and he himself told Priyavrat, yes, he should become king. He should take Grihastha Ashram. So they told him that you do not have to fear, because if you are doing it for Krishna, if you are doing it with the blessings of the great souls, then you will be protected by God. This is very important. Whatever we do, if it is not with the blessings of great souls in the service of Krishna, then we are simply on our own. It is you against all the forces of material nature. The forces of material nature are infallible. They are inconceivable. They are great. Maya is all-powerful. Maya, how Krishna creates this material existence, from his pleasure potency,
there is a shadow that is created, or a reflection. Yogamaya reflects herself into Mahamaya. And then the Supreme Personality of Godhead, through his glance, he creates Shambhu. And through that process, the whole syndrome of generative power within Maya is inaugurated, and that intercourse between the glance of Vishnu and the Maya potency creates the Mahatattva in which all of creation is situated. So what is the power of Maya? In this world, it is you against Maya. But if our activities are performed under the instruction and the blessings of those great souls who have surrendered to the personality of Godhead and who carry his grace, then it is guaranteed by Krishna that as we are sincerely and humbly following, he will protect us. And even if there is some mistake, he will rectify it. So Priyavrat became the king, and he was such a great king. He guided everyone in devotion to God. But during his reign, there were so many affairs he had to deal with that he actually, it is explained, appeared to fall into an illusion. He started getting too much attached to everything around him. But because he was doing it on the order of his guru, ultimately Krishna protected him and delivered him from all of those attachments. Priyavrat, as an exemplary king, retired after he had children, and then his dynasty went down. There was a king named Agnidra, and Agnidra had a son of the name Nabi. Nabi was a very great devotee, and he had no children at all. His wife's name was Meru Devi. And he decided that he wanted to have a son just like Lord Vishnu. So he gathered the best of the Brahmins in his kingdom, and they performed a very great yajna. And in this yajna, they called for the Supreme Personality of Godhead to appear and fulfill the desire of the king. So Lord Vishnu, in response to the mantras and the offerings, he personally manifested himself in the arena of the sacrifice. And everyone was offering beautiful prayers. The Brahmins were offering prayers. Maharaj Nabi was offering prayers. And then they explained to Lord Vishnu, Maharaj Nabi said, that I want a son just like you. And Lord Narayan replied, there is no one who can possibly be just like me. Therefore, to fulfill your desire, I will personally become your son. So from Meru Devi and Maharaj Nabi, the Supreme Personality of Godhead appeared in this world as Lord Rishabhdev. When he grew to be a young man, everyone was so much attracted by his behavior and his qualities. In fact, Rishabhdev wanted to show how to perfect one's life by perfectly following the Varnashram system in Krishna consciousness. When he was young, he became a brahmachari. And he was a very strict brahmachari. He went to the Gurukula and lived with his spiritual master. And he performed the most menial, humble services. He studied the shastras, and he was always anxious to serve the Brahmins and the saintly people in a mood of complete detachment. After he graduated from the Gurukula, he went out begging, and he gave Guru Dakshin to his Guru, and then he entered into the Grihastha order. Lord Indra personally arranged for a beautiful wife of all good qualities to assist him. Meanwhile, Maharaj Nabi, seeing that his son was suitable to take the throne, he left home along with his wife, even though he was such a beautiful, beautiful person with so much power and so much prestige. People loved him so dearly. How to give up a kingdom like that? But everything in this world is perishable. We should not be attached to any of the things of the mind and senses. It is a great illusion. Just like one time Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was with his devotees, and he wanted to show everyone how temporary this world is. So they were having a wonderful, wonderful kirtan. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he stopped the kirtan. And he said, "Watch what I will do." He took a mango seed. He planted it in the ground. He said, "Watch how this will grow." Within moments, it became a full tree with flowers and beautiful mangoes. And someone picked one of the mangoes and gave it to Lord Gauranga. And in the next second, the whole tree disappeared. And he explained, "This is material life. We have something that will bring us so much pleasure, but in most definitely, at any moment, it will simply disappear. So therefore, we should be attached to nothing but devotional service to the Lord and the chanting of the holy names of the Lord." So Maharaj Nabi went to Badrik Ashram, and all the citizens began to glorify him, singing his praises. What a great soul. Just to show us the proper example, he has not only left all the wealth of the kingdom, all the power, all the loving, loving citizens, but he even left his own son, who is a reservoir of all good qualities, just to give us the proper example. It is said that great souls, they live only to give an example for others. They live only to help others in their elevation in life. They have no selfish material motives. This is the standard that all noble souls should strive for. And by hearing the glories of such personalities, we have practical examples to follow in our life. So Rishabhdev was such a king. He was so compassionate, so generous in every way. He treated every living being more dear than his own self. What is real greatness? Real greatness is exhibited in our willingness to serve. Our willingness to serve even the most insignificant. Our significance in the guise of God is our willingness to come down to help the most insignificant. Therefore, we find great acharyas, great devotees of the Lord. They are not only compassionate to all classes of human society, but they are also especially compassionate, even to the animals and to the trees. Srila Prabhupada, with such a sad heart, he would explain what an atrocity it was that human society was murdering so many innocent trees just to make so many useless newspapers and magazines with mundane propaganda. There is so much karma in the world for sacrificing so many innocent creatures' lives for our sense gratification. So Maharaj Rishabhdev, he ruled the world in this way. And one time he took a tour with his 100 sons. And they came to a place called Brahmavarta. And there he sat down and began to instruct his sons about the goal of life. He knew that after this instruction, he would himself renounce the kingdom and give everything to his eldest son, Bharat. And these instructions of Maharaj Rishabhdev are perfectly capable of bringing all of us to the state of pure devotional service if we simply follow them nicely. He begins his instructions by explaining that human life is meant for self-realization, never for sense gratification. Sense gratification is meant for the animals. The dogs and the hogs, they are finding their pleasures in eating stool. And human beings who try to find purpose in the pleasures of the senses are in the same category as the dogs and hogs that eat stool. We may think, not like that. I have so many wonderful jewels, beautiful clothes, and fine foods, and a very handsome husband or beautiful wife. How can you compare this to eating stool? But according to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you are eating stool. There is no difference, because the mentality, the consciousness is the same. The hogs love stool. The hogs don't like your wife. They don't like your fine clothes. You put a beautiful diamond necklace and a pile of stool before a hog, and what will he run to? He will go to the stool. He doesn't care about your diamond necklace. He doesn't care about your Mercedes-Benz. He doesn't care about your big, big palace. Because that's what gives him enjoyment. So similarly, we are very much attracted to those things that give us enjoyment. And we dedicate our lives working so much just to try to obtain those things that give us enjoyment. But Rishabhdev says, this is the greatest, most sorrowful waste of human existence. Tapo divyam putrakayena satvam sudyeryasyam brahma sokyam dvanantam. Human life is meant for tapasya. The meaning of tapasya is explained here. To accept those things that are favorable for our Krishna consciousness and to reject those things that are unfavorable. If we approach a proper spiritual authority, if we approach Guru Maharaj, the scriptures, or the great sadhus, we understand clearly what is favorable for my Krishna consciousness and what is unfavorable. Sense gratification in and of itself is unfavorable. So therefore we should utilize our mind and utilize our senses in the service of the Lord. Rishabhdev explains, Nunam pramata kurute vikarma. that people in this world, they are mad, they are insane, they are intoxicated over sense enjoyment. And therefore, they are hurled into an abyss of so much entanglement and suffering. He explains that the goal and the perfection of life, which brings real happiness, is self-realization. And this can only come about by associating with Paramhamsas, with great souls, by serving them, by hearing from them. He explains that no one has ever achieved liberation from misery without this process. And in this particular verse we are reading today, he is describing how one should simultaneously not be attached to the temporary people or things around them, but at the same time, they must be very careful to execute their duties. This is the path of bhakti. Krishna tells Arjuna the same instruction, that we cannot falsely renounce the things of this world if they can be utilized in Krishna's service. How to utilize them in Krishna's service? We must have spiritual guidance. Rishabhdev is teaching purely the path of unalloyed bhakti, without tinges of mixing with material enjoyment or even the speculative process which brings us to the point of liberation. If we have any inclination toward any of these things, we cannot achieve Krishna. If we are attracted to the mystic powers of the yogis, the liberation of the jnanis, or the material blessings of the karmis, we cannot achieve Krishna. When Lord Chaitanya was a little child, he also made this principle very, very strongly exclaimed in so many occasions. On one such occasion, one of his devotees, of course at that time he was just a little child, so this person did not even know that Nimai Pandit, Nimai was his lord. His name was Murari Gupta. He was a very famous Ayurvedic doctor. And one day, although he was a devotee, he was with some others and he was discussing the Yoga Sutras. The Yoga Sutras describe how we can, through dhyana, through pranayama, through asana, how we can achieve higher and higher states of consciousness, we can liberate ourselves from material enjoyment, and we can achieve great, great powers. So, as he was discussing the Yoga Sutras, Nimai was walking next to him, and he started imitating him. He started moving his legs just like Murari Gupta. He started moving his arms and moving his hands exactly like Murari Gupta. He started moving his face and speaking. Whatever Murari Gupta said, he would speak it exactly the same way. And when somebody does this, it's very irritating. In fact, it's an insult, because he wasn't doing it to glorify him. He was doing it to make fun of him. He was a child, a small child. So Murari Gupta was becoming very disturbed. And he kept talking to his friends, and Nimai kept imitating him. So Murari Gupta became very angry. So he said, you are supposed to be a well-behaved child. Now I understand that this is all false rumors. You are very, very ill-behaved, very impolite. Where have you learned such manners? And Nimai looked at him with a smile, and he said, today when you are taking your prasad, I will show you something wonderful. And then he ran away. So Marari Gupta went home. His wife arranged nice prasad. He sat down. He started eating his prasad, Krishna's prasad. And just then, Nimai appeared. But he was in disguise. He was dressed in all wealthy, luxurious clothes, beautiful silk garments, beautiful jewelry, wonderful cosmetics on his face. His hair was nicely oiled and tied in certain nice formations. And he came in and called out, Murari! And Murari was remembering. Nimai said that he's going to show me something wonderful. Is this him? But he couldn't really recognize him. So Murari stood up to receive his guest, and Nimai said, No, no, no! You sit and enjoy your prasad very nicely. So he sat down and he started enjoying his pure Krishna prasad very nicely. And Nimai, very slowly, he began to come a little closer and a little closer and a little closer even than that. And then he became even closer. And then he was just very quietly, so Murari Gupta didn't even know he was approaching. He came right up to the plate and he passed urine in the prasad. And Murari Gupta was shocked. What have you done? What are you doing? What a disgrace! And Nimai, with a big smile on his face, his eyes glistening in ecstatic emotion, he began to dance and laugh. And Murari Gupta was astounded. He was bewildered. What have you done? And Nimai explained, as he was almost singing in a joyful tone of voice and also instructing. He explained that Krishna is the supreme goal of life. And the path of bhakti is the only means of approaching Krishna. And by mixing bhakti with karma or jnana, you spoil your bhakti. Bhakti is like pure Krishna prasad. And by trying to mix any other process of yoga is like urinating in that prasad. It's no longer very nice. By approaching God for our own material sense enjoyment, by approaching God for liberation, by approaching God for mystic cities, is like urinating in prasad. Therefore, Srila Rupa Goswami explained, Anyabhilashita sunyam jnana karmanyanavratam, that we should be aspiring for pure, unmotivated bhakti. That is the perfection of life. And we should associate with those persons who are aspiring for unmotivated bhakti. Because what we associate with, we become like. We come together because we want to love Krishna. We want to serve Krishna. We do not want anything else. And it is for this purpose that we worship the deities. It is for this purpose that we may have our jobs and work and maintain our families. We are doing it because we want to achieve love of God, and we are doing it according to Krishna's instructions. It is for this purpose that we chant the holy names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So after Nimai said like this, he began to glorify Krishna, the Lord of the Gopis, as the only goal of life, and bhakti is the only process. He ran away, disappeared. Murari Gupta was wondering, was that Nimai? Who was that? So he decided to go to Nimai's house just to see. And when he went there, Nimai was Nimai. And he was on the lap of his mother. And his mother was kissing him. And then he crawled on the lap of his father. And his father was kissing him. And they were just exchanging. The mother and father were exchanging Nimai and kissing him and embracing him. His body was so transcendentally attractive and charming that it seemed like butter melting in the arms of his mother and father. And they were just weeping and crying to see his beauty. And when Murari Gupta saw this, he realized that Nimai is the personality of Godhead. He began to cry in ecstatic love. And he began to offer his obeisances again and again and again and again. And Sachi Devi, she said, "Murari Gupta, what are you doing? Why are you offering obeisances to my son? He's just my son. Has he made some offense to you? Please forgive him. Please give him your blessings." And he said, "You do not know. He is the Supreme God, Krishna. Someday you will understand these things." So he understood the lesson. And this is the lesson that all the great avatars and all the great acharyas have taught. That it is only through pure unalloyed bhakti that we can approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Rishabhdev very, very, very strongly revealed how terribly entangling and binding all the pleasures of this world is, and how we should stick to the path of bhakti at all costs. At the end of his instructions, he told his 100 sons that now I am going to leave you, and I am appointing your eldest brother, Bharat, to be king. Do not be envious of him. He said, "I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And if you serve him, if you assist him, that is how you will serve me. In every way possible, you must assist him. There should be no competition. You should be content, satisfied, and grateful to be the servant of my servants." And then Rishabhdev coronated Bharat as king, and he left. Shukadev Goswami describes after Rishabhdev left the kingdom, he decided to take the role of an avaduta, which means one who just has no considerations of any material or social formalities whatsoever. So he was going naked, his hair disheveled. He appeared like a madman. Although he was the Supreme Lord, he was the most learned, he was very beautiful. But he didn't even bother to take baths. So his body became covered with dirt. And he was just purposely behaving like he was quite crazy. And he began to walk all around the whole world. And everywhere he went, people thought he was a madman and abused him. Everywhere. Whoever saw him practically amongst materialistic people, they would abuse him with the most terrible, terrible words of criticism and insult. They would throw stones at him. They would beat him. They would kick him. They would pass urine on him. So many injustices. And he just considered, of course, his body is transcendental. But by the Yogamaya potency, for our example, he considered his body material. And as they were doing all these things against him, he was thinking, "Let them do. What difference does it make? My soul cannot be touched by any of them. He was thinking that this body, it's destined for this type of misery and death anyway. So what difference does it make whether it happens now or later? That is the nature of this temporary body. It's going to be abused, it's going to fall apart, it's going to die, so why should I take care of it? So he was completely indifferent. And in this way he traveled around the whole world. And then at one point he sat down and he just accepted whatever came of its own accord. Just to show the example that God will provide for everyone. We should not be so anxious. We know that God will provide. In Vrindavan, Sanatan Goswami was living. And at one time, he would just accept whatever came of its own accord. He wasn't concerned. Whether he starved or whether he ate was not his concern. His only concern was to keep his mind completely engrossed in remembering Krishna and chanting his holy name. One day Sanatana Goswami was sitting on the banks of Pavan Sarovar, which was that time a beautiful forest, and he had not eaten in days. And a very wonderful and charming little cowherd boy approached him with a pot of milk and said, "Please take this milk. I know that you're fasting." And Sanatana Goswami was suspicious. "How do you know I was fasting?" He said, "Because so many of my friends, the gopas, cowherd boys, while they're herding cows, they have been watching you for so many hours and so many days, and you've been sitting here, no food. So they reported to me, so I have come to bring you this milk. Kindly take this milk." He said, "All right, I will take the milk, but you sit here and let me give you the container back." He said, "No, I have to go milk cows." So he disappeared. And Sanatana Goswami started drinking the milk. And as he was drinking the milk, he realized that was Krishna Gopal. That Gopal is so much favorable to his devotees that he always protects and provides for his devotees. So he was thinking that what a terrible person I am, that I have accepted service from Krishna. In the religions of today, most everybody, they are doing yajñas, they are performing rituals, they are chanting mantras, they are giving in charity. And what is their goal? That Krishna will serve them. Krishna will give me what I want in this world. But the pure bhaktas, who are our idols in life, they are not like this. Krishna came to serve Sanatana Goswami, and Sanatana Goswami was thinking that this is very, very sorrowful. I want to serve and please Krishna. He should not serve me. So from that day on, he began the process of Madhukari. He would go door to door every day to beg a little piece of roti from different houses. And in this way, he would eat. And in this way, he would not disturb Krishna to come and give him food. That is how the Madhukari process started in Vrindavan. Not because of hunger, but because the Goswamis wanted to make sure that they were only serving Krishna and not accepting service from Krishna. The principle of Madhukari amongst the Goswamis was born of unalloyed pure devotion. So Rishabhdev was also following this principle for some time. And in this way, he taught how one should be completely immersed in a higher purpose of life. When he was king, he was just as highly realized. Even though he was maintaining his family, although he was gaining riches for the kingdom, he was always absorbed in the higher goals of life. He was always absorbed as a role model, although he was God in his role, all living beings. Sukadev Goswami explained that he had all the mystic perfection, but he never, ever, ever demonstrated any such thing. He always appeared just like an ordinary common man. And Maharaj Parikshit was wondering why. He said to Shukadev Goswamiji, he said, if you had all these wonderful mystic perfections, which are the fruits of so much yajna, why he didn't demonstrate anything? He appeared like such a normal human being, just taking the regular course of activities, being insulted, being wounded. And Shukadev Goswami explained, because these mystic cities are of the mind, they are not of a spiritual source directly. They are a type of sense enjoyment of the mind to perform it. And then Shukadev Goswami explained that Rishabhdev wanted to teach all of us never to make friends with your mind. To know that your mind is your only enemy. Not only the greatest enemy, but the only enemy. The reservoir of all the miseries in creation is not due to anything but your own mind. We may blame our friend who does some terrible thing to us. We may say, you are the cause of my misery. Or some politicians who cheat us. We may think he is causing me misery. Or natural disturbances, such as too much rain or too much heat. Or mosquito bites us and we get malaria. We think so many enemies. According to Shukadev Goswami, they are not your enemies. Your only enemy is your own mind. Because it is your mind that is so much trying to enjoy through this body. Or your own mind that is trying to enjoy through itself. And that is the cause of all frustration and misery. Because the mind is between the body and the soul. And it is due to the soul's misconception of identifying with the mind that the mind carries the soul to think you are this body, you are this mind. It is due to the mind that we are always aspiring for material enjoyment and we become endlessly attached. Therefore, we should never trust our mind. And it is explained that just like an unchaste wife, that is the mind. The unchaste wife is always looking for paramours, for exploitative men to enjoy. And what are the paramours of the mind? Lust, anger, envy, greed, pride, and illusion. And one who is aspiring for spiritual advancement must guard and protect the mind from associating with such souls, such paramours. Because if a husband lets a wife associate with such people, they will ultimately kill him. And similarly, if we allow our mind to be free to associate with these material impurities, then our mind will kill our spiritual propensities. Srila Prabhupada explained that yoga means simply to control the mind.
when we are hearing the discourse, where is our mind? I ask all of you at this very time, where is your mind? Is it absorbed in hearing the katha of the Lord, or is it thinking about your own miserable situations in this world? Thinking about what I'm longing to receive, what I have lost, what sort of injustices have come upon me. Thinking about, what I will accomplish. Lord Chaitanya taught us, Krishna taught us in Bhagavad Gita, the perfect process of controlling the mind, of making the mind our friend, is to always remember Krishna. And where does Krishna appear? Krishna appears within his service. When we are thinking of devotional service, we are thinking of Krishna. When we are thinking of the beautiful form of the deity, we are thinking of Krishna. When we are thinking of serving the devotees, we are thinking of Krishna. But the most important ways of hearing of Krishna is hearing his glories and chanting his names. Sravanam Kirtanam Vishnu. The means, the foundation by which we can think of Krishna through all of our activities in life are dependent on our sincere effort to hear and chant the glories of the Lord. Therefore, Srila Rupa Goswami explains the first principles in devotional service. One is to associate with devotees. Two is to regularly chant the holy names of Krishna. And the next is to regularly hear the glories of the Lord in the form of Srimad Bhagavatam. And this is called sadhana or bhajan. And it is essential. It is the building block by which all of our spiritual progress is facilitated. Therefore, we chant 16 rounds. Sincere devotees within Srila Prabhupada's movement chant at least 16 rounds every day. Some people think this is troublesome. Some movements say, why so many rounds? Chant any amount. Chant 4 rounds, 2 rounds, 3 rounds. That is one thing. But Srila Prabhupada, who was so dearly empowered to spread this message throughout the world, he gave us this, that for aspiring devotees, chant what you can, but gradually come to the standard of 16 rounds. And it is an austerity. It may seem troublesome, but it's the goal of life to keep your mind fixed on Krishna. And Krishna is most accessible through his name. So this tapasya is necessary, it is essential. We have so many other things to do, but how will we think of Krishna through them if we cannot fix our minds on his name, if we cannot cleanse our minds through his name? And we also must hear his glories. Unless we are hearing from the great devotees of the Lord, unless we are discussing Krishna amongst ourselves by repeating the words of the Gita or the Bhagavad, then Maya will definitely steal away our intelligence. This is essential. Hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord in the association of devotees is the basis of all spiritual life on the path of bhakti. And this must be the number one first priority of our life. If we fail our exams, if we lose all our wealth, if we're kicked out of our homes, what have we lost? Something we're going to lose tomorrow anyway. But if you do not chant your quota of the holy name, if you do not regularly hear Krishna's glories, then you have lost the connection of your soul with God. That is the greatest loss. As per this verse that we are reading today, we understand that yes, we must be very dutiful,
If we are students, we should be the best possible students and do best in our exams. If we are in business, if we are in profession, we should do best we can, exemplary. But never to become so immersed in such things that we do not have time to maintain our relationship with God through hearing and chanting His glories. Hare Krishna,
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare.
Then Sukadeva Goswami goes on to explain how after traveling around, Rishabhdev came to the state of Karnataka. And there he was in a forest. And because of the winds, the bamboos rubbed against each other and created fire. This is the nature of this world. We don't want problems. We make so many arrangements so that problems will not come. But problems come. Whether you're a devotee, whether you're not a devotee, problems will come. Just like the bamboos. Nobody sees how they are rubbing, but they are rubbing by the arrangement of the wind, and it creates a terrible, terrible forest fire. So as this forest fire was blazing, Rishabhdev, knowing that this body will be lost in due course, knowing that his lila had been fulfilled, he just walked into the fire and allowed his body to be burned to ashes. One may ask, if the Lord's body is transcendental, how it is burned to ashes? Because the Lord's body, in its transcendental state, can do whatever the Lord wants it to do. In his lila. Someone was asking the other day, if Krishna's body is transcendental, how is it when Bhishma was shooting arrows, it was bleeding? If Krishna's body is transcendental, he can let his body do anything he likes. Bhishma was a kshatriya. Kshatriyas like to see blood. So he wanted to please his devotee by showing him nice blood. Krishna can do anything. So the transcendental body of Rishabh appeared within the material modes to be burnt to ashes. And in this way he concluded his wonderful earthly lila. And Bharat Maharaj, his son, following in his footsteps, following the instructions he had heard from his father, became the great king in which this earth and to this day this country is named Bharat Varsha. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.